Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 182 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is Sunday. It is Labor Day weekend. We are having fun talking about baseball, and joining me as often, the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Oh, it's going well. I mean, the minor league season's winding down, and I have a bunch of writers that are almost in mourning as a result of it. But other than that, I mean, yeah, it's been actually, it's kind of funny. Like, every one of the guys who have, like, their, like, last recap has happened. I'm like, it's the last recap. They're like, it's your last one. And they're like, what? Well, what do I mean? What are we going to do? I mean, Garrett, like, volunteered for every, like, Gwinnett playoff or game that exists. He doesn't even know how to function. Matt's, like, you know, trying to, like, write emails to Vince McMahon to try to get, like, him to start a baseball league. Like, it's wild.
I believe you, number one. I guess let's just stay there for a second. I'm not going to try to rob from Road to Atlanta too much, but is there anything that, I guess, maybe casual minor league Braves fans, which I put myself in that category, should be watching for in the next few days? Obviously, Gwinnett is the playoff run team, but anything that people should be looking out for aside from just subscribing to Road to Atlanta, which is the biggest thing to do, obviously. But anything that I should be on the lookout for, Eric?
Look, if you're really into minor league baseball, Gwinnett's the only team that the Braves have in the playoffs this year. Rome had, like, an outside chance going into the last week, and then it didn't really work out. The Florida State League actually has the problems, and as well as the GCL has, you know, the hurricane coming through, possibly. I guess no one really knows what that thing's doing, and Mississippi didn't make it. So, you know, ultimately, it's just, you know, if you're wanting to follow that, that's like the one, like, minor league storyline in terms of teams. But other than that, it's just kind of, you know, as guys get added to the expanded roster once the Gwinnett's done with their playoff run. And we're not expecting any big names to come up, honestly. You know, the guys that are on the 40-man roster who have already seen time are the guys that are going to get some time in the majors. And a lot of the guys that you would have honestly thought would have been a part of September call-ups, no question. I mean, some of those guys might not be there. I'm not even sure why you'd even want to have Tuki DeSun on this roster, for example.
Let's talk about the call-ups, because it's September 1st as we record this. You know, it's Sunday night of Labor Day weekend, but it's doubles as the end of August, and, you know, rosters expanded starting today. And the Braves did call up a trio of guys. They called up Johan Camargo, Chad Sabatka, and Jeremy Walker, in addition to reactivating Brian McCann, which was obviously a no-brainer. He was going to be coming back regardless, but not like a flurry of activity. They're only carrying, you know, three or four guys extra at this moment. And guys like Austin Riley and Adam Duvall, and you mentioned Tukey and Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson, those guys are not on the roster at this moment. What do you make of what's happened so far? I know it's, you know, it's literally the first day of September. What do you make of what they chose to do first? And how do you think the Braves are going to handle the next, you know, few days and weeks in terms of the roster?
I think that the Toronto series is going to be a lot of just a lot of the guys that we're seeing currently right now. The nice thing about what's going on is that the Braves have a homestand and their AAA affiliate is right here. So what they could easily do is, let's say Bryce Wilson starts game one of the playoff series or whatever. You know, as soon as that game's over, they can just put him. They can literally just slide him over and put him on the Atlanta roster. Or if they get ousted fairly early in the playoffs, which is not outside the realm of possibilities. Like, those guys can, like, very quickly be moved onto the major league roster. I just don't think the Braves felt a urgency to move a ton of guys onto the 40-man roster. They want to see, kind of, you know, give these guys some experience, you know, these last at bats, the last possible at bats they can give them in AAA before they can move them over. And it's a fairly easy transition for them to make. It's, you know, I'd feel a little bit differently about it if they hadn't like fully taken advantage of expanded rosters going into the National Series. But when you have this two game set against Toronto, plus you have an off day on Wednesday, it's not something that like, you know, makes me super concerned or anything like that. If anything changes, if someone gets hurt or anything like that, then they can make a move, and it's a fairly straightforward one. Just move guys over and bring guys in from Gwinnett. If like the AAA affiliate was like a Pacific Coast League team or something like that, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, the logistics are important, and because they're home all week, that does help. By the way, and we might come back to this later, but it's always bizarre to have a Wednesday off day. Just a very strange thing, and I assume
weird.
It's because of Labor Day, but it's just a bit odd. Something to keep an eye out for this
Welcome,
week.
Welcome, though.
It's yeah, I mean, it's not a bad thing, necessarily. It's just kind of strange. You know, as far as Sabatka and Walker and Camargo, you know, Camargo obviously hasn't hit this year, but someone who brings a lot of versatility to the table, someone you would certainly have thought was going to be coming up regardless of how much he's used. He was always going to be on the team in September. Walker is, you know, I'll let you talk about him if you would like to. Sabatka has not been good, but, you know, I guess he would just be, it can't hurt to have an arm. He's on the 40-man, you know, having a guy who can just pitch in mop-up duty so that you're not burning guys that don't need to be burned in blowouts one way or the other, or if you get to the 17th inning and you're just out of pitchers, maybe he should pitch. But honestly, Sabatka, I would hope, would be the absolute last option, just barely ahead of Charlie Culberson. I'm somewhat kidding on that.
Yeah,
but
only kind of kidding there.
Yeah, I'm only a little bit kidding about that. But honestly, like, he is, I mean, maybe you disagree, but he is very, very clearly should be the only use in an emergency situation kind of guy, which is fine. That's what these expanded rosters are for. But like, that's kind of what he should be there for.
Yeah, Sabatka has not been particularly good. That I enjoyed as much as anyone that 2 months of time where he was throwing upper 90s and actually commanding it. But the entirety of the time that I've been covering minor league baseball, Sabatka has been in this minor league organization, and except for those 2 months, he's either never commanded that fastball to reliably throw it for strikes or has been hurt. So he's not a guy that I've been particularly high on. Again, I enjoyed that little stretch, and hopefully, you know, who knows, maybe he finds the magic and he ends up being a nice little piece again. And it's a live arm. I mean, the fastball and breaking ball when it's on is really like a really good thing, but it just doesn't happen that often. Walker has been one of my favorite stories from the 2019 season in the minor leagues, because he was a starter for his entirety of his career and was kind of an afterthought from that particular draft class. And he performed reasonably well. He had these starts where he'd get hit hard, and he would sometimes go deep in games, and sometimes he couldn't get out of the third inning. I felt like the fastball was really straight, and I had written him off more or less. Then he had gotten handcuffed to Patrick Weigel when he was kind of coming back from injury. You know, they would run Weigel out at Mississippi. He'd throw two or three innings, and then Walker would kind of finish up. And what happened was that Weigel kept getting stretched out. Walker was getting shortened to where he would be going two or three innings, and he turned into a really good reliever. And he's kind of leveled off a little bit. He's not quite as dominant since he's been put back in AAA, and you know, hasn't really seen much action in the majors. But it's a really interesting story of a guy who kind of ended up finding a niche unexpectedly. And I think he could be a good relief arm. He seems to have kind of the demeanor for it on the mound. And as for Camargo, look, we kind of saw what he was in the majors this year, and it was really rough. But he was down in Gwinnett, I think it was for 14 games. He hit safely in the first 13, including like a ton of multi-hit games. You know, when the guy's batting 400 or 500 over a 15-game stretch, man, you can't really just leave him down there. And for when you're wanting to kind of slowly expand the rosters a bit and add a bat, I mean, you can do far worse than him, especially the way he's been hitting. I don't know if it's going to stick. I don't know if we're going to get Camargo from 2018, or we're going to get the one we've had for most of 2019, or maybe somewhere in between. I imagine it'll probably be somewhere in between. And that's a guy that's worth having on your bench. You know, has some pop, has some versatility. I'm not sure if he can really field, which is a weird thing because that was the one thing he was really good at for a long time.
Yeah. The arm's there at least.
Yeah, he throws, he can definitely throw the ball hard. I'm not sure if it's straight or good, but he hasn't been this year, but we saw him be a very good player last year. And, you know, it was kind of a foregone conclusion that he was going to get called up. So I'm fine with those guys being on the roster. You know, I understand all of it. Well, what names get added and what roles they have going down the stretch, you know, what you do with Patrick Weigel, who, you know, we haven't really got to see in the majors, and, you know, these other guys that are on the 40-man roster who have had seen really limited time, and what roles they're going to have down the stretch. Do you put Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson in your bullpen or do you give guys, you know, do spot starts and give guys, you know, turns off in the rotation down the stretch. That ultimately depends on what happens, I think, in that four-game series against the Nationals.
I was about to say the same thing. Like, you know, if the Braves, you know, a week from today when we're recording next Sunday night, if the Braves are up by 8 games or 9 games in the standings, then you can really start to maybe, you know, get creative and maybe give guys days off and skip Mike Soroka or do whatever you want to do. But if Washington comes in here and wins 3 out of 4, then you can't do that anymore. So your point is a good one. I mean, it puts a little bit too much pressure on this week, but we kind of knew that was going to happen anyway with the Nats coming in, and the Nats have been ridiculous. We'll talk about them more in a little bit when we start talking about games. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird situation to kind of say and put that emphasis on this week, but it's just kind of the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big, big week.
It really is. And just on the bat side, obviously the two most high profile guys that are still in the minors are Austin Riley and Adam Duvall. I mean, Duvall, we kind of know. Riley, we'll see. And I mean, those guys will be up at some point, obviously. I'm not in love with, I saw some of the rationale that was out there was like, well, you can't bring those guys up now because they're Gwinnett's trying to win the championship. I'm like, I don't care. I just don't care about that, Eric. I'm sorry. I will speak for the Braves fan that does not care about that and say I don't care about that. So I would hope that that's not the reason why they're still down. Maybe it is.
I'm sure it's like a consideration, but it's more like giving those guys at bats and, you know, not having to do too many weird things with some of your own.
I mean, especially Riley. Riley just getting at bats is a good thing. Like, I'm okay with that. Duvall, I think I would have just had Duvall up today. But I understand why you wouldn't. So.
Yeah, it's just especially since Duvall hasn't been particularly good since he's been back up.
No, he's just a guy that's a major league player. He can play defense. Like, even, you know, worst case scenario, he just is a pure power pinch hitting bat that can play a little defense. Like, it's not like he's needs to be playing every day in Atlanta right now, even with the injuries. But I think he's kind of the prototypical guy you would just bring up because, you know, his development is not really a concern. Like Austin Riley, obviously you're looking long-term with him. Adam Duvall is, you're just playing right now. He's not someone who's looking to be a huge part of your future. So I don't know. I get it. I'm not upset about it. If he's still in Gwinnett a week from now, I'll be shaking my head a little bit, but you know, who cares?
I don't foresee that happening. I just don't. I mean, ultimately the Braves not loading up their 40-man roster right now and bringing everyone up, it does buy them some time to make some decisions about their 40-man roster, which can get a little tricky when you have guys like Nick Markakis coming off the DL, injured list seemingly relatively soon. You know, what happens with Ender and all this other. I mean, like, you have a lot of, like, choices, just not with just, like, the active roster, but, like, the overall 40-man. I mean, it's not an easy decision to make right now, and this kind of just buys them some time to, like, evaluate some guys some more. So it's not something I was, like, particularly up in arms about. I felt it was fine.
Yeah, no big deal there. Last thing before we take a break and get back to some, you know, nitty gritty baseball things.
Here we go with the Hawks talk.
Sorry, I was looking at something and that's what happens. The Braves made a trade this week, which they're not allowed to do, except for they acquired someone who was not on a 40-man roster, and that is Caleb. Is it Thielbar? Is that how you pronounce his name, Eric?
I am reasonably certain it's Thielbar.
Any intrigue here in a present day sense, or is that just a pure future facing move for the Braves? You are the expert on this podcast anyway. What do you make of that trade?
Well, I definitely wouldn't call it a future facing move. The guy's 32 years old.
That's what I mean. It's kind of a weird thing because he wasn't on the 40-man roster, but I was going to let you bring that up. But it's a situation where it's just kind of odd. Like, it only makes sense if you think he might make the team better right now, but he's not on a 40-man. It's kind of a weird timing move, and people were asking questions about it.
Well, look, he's a guy that struck out 94 batters in 78 innings as a reliever in AAA. What I'm sure the Braves are thinking is we need as many options for reliable bullpen arms down the stretch as possible. How can we do that? You know, I'm sure they looked at the free agent market and, you know, collectively kind of threw open their mouths a little bit, because at this point of the year, since without that waiver trade deadline, you know, you can get guys after they've cleared waivers. Since you can't make those trades, they explored what options they had, and one option that was available to them. And, you know, credit to the Braves, who have been really creative since the trade deadline to be able to still add pieces. You know, really, like, as soon as guys get, you know, clear waivers and get released, they've been snatching up the guys that they felt like they could help them just for short stretches. And in this particular case, I mean, this is a guy who's put up some really good numbers, and he's been good in AAA and AA recently. It's not just a one-year thing. He's been fairly consistently good. He just hasn't really gotten a lot of opportunities in the majors. I don't think he's pitched since 2015 in the majors for the Twins. And you know, he's a guy that's been striking guys out, has been hard to square up, doesn't walk guys, which again, for this bullpen is a pretty big deal. And, you know, it's, I doubt that he ends up being anything. I don't even think they're going to add him to the 40-man roster.
I was going to ask you, here's my easiest way to ask this question, Eric. Right now, today, would you rather have him on the mound or Chad Sabatka on the mound?
I don't know enough about Theobar to answer that question, but I suspect my answer would be that I'd rather have Theobar.
That's kind of what I think, too. I mean, obviously, I don't know anything. I'm just looking at numbers, so that's a pure Fangraphs evaluation. But that would be the only angle that I would present. I'm just coming at this as the simplest way possible without knowing too much information here. Maybe they just think he's better than somebody they already have on the 40-man, but I don't know. It's just
I'm sure it cost them next to nothing to do that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was like $1,000 or something. Some crazy small number.
Yeah. It's a creative move. Probably won't amount to anything. But again, still kind of a savvy thing to do just to kind of continue to find ways to make some things happen.
Yeah, it does not hurt to have more options, even if he's just nothing. That was a trade we could talk about for 2 minutes on this podcast. And we've just done that, Eric. So I appreciate you providing me with that information and that angle to navigate. All right, one more. I guess we'll save that for a second. Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back and we'll talk about some actual baseball. And hold on 1 second.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, Eric, we're back. And the Braves are pretty good at baseball. Let's just talk about that for a second. I want to talk about August as a whole, because it's September 1st. It's easy to talk about August the way that went. But at this moment, including today, the Braves have won 15 of the last 19 games. That is very good. They went 19-9 in August. And hilariously, they actually lost a game in the standings because the Nats have been ridiculous. Even before today, the Nats were, by the way, 44-20. So the Nats are now 45-20 in their last 65 games, which is just silly. But the Braves have been playing great, so they've been able to hold on to this lead. I mean, it's kind of insane. If you told me, granted, that would have been 2+ months ago, but if you said, all right, the Nats are going to win 45 of their next 65 games, Eric, is there any chance the Braves are up by 5.5 games? I would have said no. Let's just say that right now.
I would have said no, too. I was famously optimistic at the beginning of the year because I called the Braves to win the division, but I also said that this was going to be really super close. You know what I mean? Because I did feel like that the Nationals were going to be good. I felt like the Mets and Phillies were going to be better, but those were teams that I just felt had warts, and I was more on the camp, but I just thought that the Phillies were abysmal defensively. I didn't realize the Mets were going to be as bad as they were defensively, but they kind of came back down to earth, and the Nationals had a rough start, and now they're on this crazy run where it's been like, it's a lot of fun to be watching that team. Just because I have a lot of appreciation for like the Juan Soto's and Anthony Rendon's and that pitching staff. I like the Braves matchup against them just for reasons that aren't particularly interesting. We can probably talk about that once those matchups actually happen. Yeah. But it's it's fascinating kind of how – I mean, the Nationals are the third best team in the National League. I don't think it's actually that particularly close. You know what I mean? I think it's the Dodgers who are the class. The Braves have been slowly creeping up on the Dodgers for the best overall in the National League.
If you look at the, I don't want to say advanced, but let's just say advanced numbers to make it as easy as possible. Simulations, the people that just are using systems, basically it would tell you the Nats have been better than the Braves this year. Now, obviously the standings don't tell that story, so, and that's the most important thing. But that just goes to show like how good the Nationals have been. Clearly the Dodgers are in their own stratosphere. The Dodgers have a plus 217 run differential, which is just outrageous, in September. But so that, let's just put them to the side. I definitely agree with you though, that 2 and 3 are the Braves and the Nationals. It's fairly clear at this point. The Nats did the Braves a huge favor by struggling so badly for the first like 2 months of the season. That came in big time handy. Cause you know, since then they've been the best team. Actually, they've actually been better than the Dodgers during this run, which is pretty crazy. But anyway, it's, you know, the good thing about the Braves, if they are to hold on here, and by the way, as of this moment, 538 is the one that updates in real time. They give the Braves an 87% chance to win the division. That's pretty good odds. If the Braves can hold off the Nats, that means they avoid the Nats probably in the first round, which is good because the Dodgers are not going to probably come back to the pack. I mean, the Braves are only 4.5 games.
They're creeping up on them.
They're actually closer to the Dodgers than they are to the Nats, which is something I didn't really realize till right this second. They are closer to the Dodgers than they are to the Nationals. Now, I think it's, you know, this is probably my bias a little bit showing, but I think it is certainly more likely that they do not win the East than they are to actually pass the Dodgers. Would you agree with that?
I have a high appreciation for the Dodgers, and I think that they are, like, it's... I don't think people fully appreciate how hard it is when you're talking about like without injuries and anything, when you're looking at two good teams, overcoming anything over a 3-game deficit is extraordinarily difficult. You know,
there's only 4 weeks left. I mean, they've played 130 games. So that means they have 24 games remaining. You're up 5.5 with 24 to go and you're a good baseball team. There's a reason why the Braves are given, you know, high 80% chance to win the division on all of these systems and all these projections. It's because that's a big gap. So, you know, if everything just holds steady, you avoid the Nationals in the first round because the Nationals, even if they were to emerge from the wild card game, they had to play the Dodgers. And that's a good thing when your top two, at least in our minds, your top two opponents in the National League will be playing each other on the other side. That's what you want. So, I'm not trying to look too far ahead here, but that's an important thing. And, you know, I don't want to make this into a Nationals love fest. They have been ridiculous, but to put it back on the Braves, I mean, going 19-9 in August, yeah, they lost a game in the standings, but they took care of business. They've been really, really good for a very, very long time here. And that gives me a lot of confidence. Like, I think people know that I'm not like a blind homer. If anything, I'm accused of being and too skeptical or whatever it is. And I think I'm trying to just be as accurate as possible. But, you know, this has been an awesome run. And this is a team that's playing out of its mind. And basically, they're riding about 4.5 guys right now offensively. And the fact that they basically had 5 guys hit well at all in the entire month of August, and they still went 19-9, they just have ways of winning baseball games, and it's going very well.
Yeah, I mean, like, and kudos to the pitching staff. The starters have been good with like a couple of hiccups here and there, but that happens. And
I mean, Julio looked like he was going to like fall apart completely. Yep. And if you look up and he's like, you know, he didn't pitch well, but he gave him a chance to win. I mean, most of the time, with few exceptions over the last, I mean, honestly, a few months, but especially in the last month or so, even the bad starts are not disastrous. There was the one Julio start where he was just an absolute disaster, but even their bad start, like Folti wasn't great earlier this week. You know, they had a chance to win.
Yeah, he kept them in it.
Yeah, it's if you give up 4 runs in 6 innings, it's not good. But you know, the blow up games are just not happening. And when your offense is playing like, I mean, obviously they had a little run where they stopped scoring for about a week and a half, and they were still able to win some games because they timed it up very well. I mean, there's some luck involved in that, or maybe not luck. Maybe luck's the wrong word. There's some good fortune in that to have your offensive struggles go along with your pitching staff suddenly being awesome. But, you know, however it works, man, I don't know.
I like how you corrected luck to good fortune.
It's not luck. I mean, it's just, you know what I mean, though? Like, yeah. If you have a situation where you don't hit for a week and you still win, like, 4 out of 6 games, and it's like, okay, it's because the pitch lights out. You know, Max Fried's throwing gems, and Julio had a great start in there, and Soroka and obviously Keuchel was really good for a stretch. So it's not luck. It's just the way that lined up, because if that hitting had happened this week, you would have lost at least twice, if not 3 times, and yep. Instead you won 4 out of 5. So,
yeah, and it's kudos to the starting staff, and the bullpen has been really good. There's been a couple hiccups here and there, but honestly, there is no bullpen that is bulletproof, and they are pitching like a good bullpen right now.
I mean, Swarzak's been really rough recently, but other than that, it's been very good. Like, the guys, we talked about this last week with Zach a little bit, so I don't want to step on that too much. But, I mean, Melanson, I mean, Martin had the one hiccup this week, but Melanson has been pretty darn good. You know, it's not a situation where you're looking at this bullpen anymore with a ton of fear. Like, are there guys that I don't love? Yes. But it's not a weakness anymore, which is just very nice to see. And, like, even today, I'm watching this game right before we started recording. We started recording within like 10 minutes of the last out, which doesn't always happen, but it happened today because of the late start. I watched the end of the game, and I'm thinking, I wasn't terrified. I mean, they're up by one, they're up, and then it became two, and it's, you know, am I worried? No, not really. And that's a good thing to have happen, which that was not the case even a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, Shane Green's had really, like, his, like, really 10 good. Straight starts. Where he's been 10 straight appearances. He's been really good. Melanson just seems to be a super steady closer. You know, it's not flashy stuff. He's not, you know, throwing 98 miles an hour and, like, wipeout sliders. He's just throwing that knuckle curve and throwing well-located fastballs and just getting the job done. And that's all this team really needed, is just kind of a stable, sometimes it's not going to work out, but most of the time it is. And that's just what this bullpen is. And I will say one thing about the Nationals is that one thing that has been true, their offense has been so good, particularly Soto and Rendon, is that their bullpen is leaky. You know, they've been giving up some leads. Now they've been kind of bailed out by, again, the offense playing well, but now
starting pitching. I mean, for the season, they actually have allowed 45 fewer runs than the Braves have, but most of that is the fact that they have Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin. That's usually helpful. But I agree. Their bullpen, as weird as this is, I mean, I guess it's not that weird right now to say this, but the Braves bullpen is better than the Nationals bullpen. I'm much more confident in the Braves bullpen than the Nationals bullpen at this moment. Whether that holds or not for another month, we'll see. But, you know, right now, today, September 1st, Braves bullpen would be an advantage over the Nationals, which we couldn't have said a couple of months ago.
No, and, you know, it's going to be interesting because I don't think much of the Mets personally, but they have kind of been able to, like, put up some, like streaky performances.
I mean, they're competitive. They're fine.
And they have pitching, too, and they're going to go against that Nationals team and for a 3-game set this week. And, coming out of that, we'll see kind of whether or not there's, you know, any give in what the Nationals have been doing, or they just continue to destroy teams. But it's an exciting pennant race where the Braves are in a really good position, but it's also a situation where if the Nationals sweep the Braves, this next month is going to be excruciating, right? But what seems more likely in my mind to happen is just, we're going to see a lot of splits, like a 2-2 split in this 4-game one. The Phillies are a little bit of a wild card, but they haven't been playing particularly well either. And then you have with these next 7 games with the Nationals, if the Braves have a winning record, they're going to win the division. I just feel that way.
I totally agree. And listen, we've teased this a number of times going back several months now, but we've now arrived between Thursday the 5th this week and Thursday the 19th, so a 15-day sample, that they play only the Nationals and the Phillies. And the Phillies are not really in the race in terms of the division anymore, but they're still a team that is better than average. They're 4 games above 500. They're a divisional foe. You play them 4 times on the road to begin next week. You know, you could certainly, you know, I'd rather play some other teams than the Phillies. Are the Phillies awesome? No, they're not. But they're talented, and they could certainly come out and beat the Braves in a series. That would not be surprising to anybody.
It could happen.
there's a lot of pressure. You know, the Nationals games are obviously more pressure than the Phillies games are at this point, but it's still a sort of a treacherous stretch. You know, it's nice to have the Blue Jays at home these first two games and then followed by an off day, sort of recharge the batteries, because the Blue Jays are not awesome. But they just beat you on Tuesday this week, and they actually beat Mike Soroka. they beat Mike Soroka in Toronto, which is his home. I don't want to say hometown, but home country. So you can lose a baseball game. Just ask the Tigers and the Astros, who the Tigers beat somehow last week or whatever that was.
Yeah, I think it was a couple weeks ago, but yeah, it was
whatever it was. But anyway, it's, you know, we're all looking ahead, but they have to win. They have to take care of business in these first two games. I do want to, before we look ahead of the schedule, I guess full steam ahead at the end of the podcast, I wanted to reflect a little bit on August, and we talked about it in a second, but I wanted to highlight one guy in particular. You know, the top four hitters that we all talk about all the time, Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Josh Donaldson, and the great Freddie Freeman, who has been ridiculous. Freddie had two home runs today. And by the way, I think if I read right on Twitter, Brian Snicker anointed Freddie as the MVP of the league today on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter, but in an interview, I saw somebody pass that along. He's not going to win the MVP, but Freddie's awesome. So
he's been insane. Had an insane game today too.
Yeah. So I just want to say that out loud. But I want to get to, and I wish you had something on those four guys. We could talk about those four guys forever because they're awesome. But.
Yeah. One thing I want to say about that I just kind of realized. I looked up Fangraphs WAR on just offensively for the month of August. Of the top 10 teams that put up, like, in terms of F WAR for offense for the month of August, four of them are in the National East, and the Braves are the fourth amongst those four.
Yikes!
But everyone's in the top 10. So like, and then
yeah, as good as the top four have been, and you know, looking at their numbers for August, all four had a 125 WRC plus or better for the month of August. Ozzie was 125, up to 152 for Josh Donaldson. Those guys were incredible. But aside from the top four, the only regular that played a bunch of games—sorry, there are two. One of whom is Ender Inciarte, who was famously awesome at the beginning of August, and then got hurt. The only other guy who was legitimately good this month, or I guess last month now, was Matt Joyce. Matt Joyce has been raking, and I wanted to reference him because for the season he's been very good as well, but especially in August, a 133 WRC plus, a 420 on base percentage. Matt Joyce has always hit the ball. I've been high on Matt Joyce forever. When they signed him, I was high on it because he's, if nothing else, Matt Joyce will roll out of bed and hit righties. Like, he's just going to do that for his entire life. He'll be 50 and he'll be pinch hitting against righties and raking. Matt Joyce is good at exactly one thing, at least really good at one thing, but he's really, really good at it. And I think there's a lot of value in that player. And I think we haven't talked about him enough on this podcast, with good reason. He was definitely a supporting piece, and he was thrust into bigger duty by the injuries that have happened. But Matt Joyce has been really good. And, you know, he got some shine this week, at least in terms of the coverage locally, because he was really good. But I wanted to at least talk about him for a second, because I'm not going to say without him that they would have lost some games. But, you know, he's been sort of the fifth wheel during this run, which is crazy to say, but Matt Joyce has been the fifth best player on this team, at least position player, for the last, you know, 6 weeks or so. And I'm not sure you would know that just by the way he's covered, but he's been awesome.
Yeah, he's been really good, and they've been getting some timely hits from, you know, the guys they've been kind of picking up on the scrap heap. I'm not sure what happened to Echeverria to all of a sudden turn into a real hitter, and you know, Billy Hamilton
hit like a rocket off the wall today. It was insane.
Or yeah, he smoked one, and you know, we know he can run, and that what he can do has real value. But you know, if he is able to hit too, then you know, you got that becomes a lot more interesting. I'm pretty skeptical that that's actually going to hold, but you know,
it's not going to. You can quote me on that. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'll be happy about that. This is not a situation where we don't know what Billy Hamilton is at the plate. We have a very, very, very large sample of him being a terrible hitter. It's not a shot at Billy. That's not why they traded for him. They traded for him to play defense and run. It's nice that he's hitting. It's been very helpful that he's hitting.
Yep.
But he's not going to keep hitting. It's just never happened before.
Yeah, he's actually a guy on the roster that can play center field with some kind of upside. It just doesn't have to be with the bat.
In fact, I mean, you know, we can get into the nitty-gritty if we want to, but you know, he's played a lot more than he was supposed to play. And I think it's because he hit a little bit upon arrival, but, you know, him playing a lot and, like, starting a lot right now makes me uncomfortable, I gotta be honest with you. But if he does what he's supposed to do, it's okay. It's working out fine because he's hitting, which isn't going to continue, but he's a good piece to have on the roster. By the way, Matt Joyce, real quickly to go back on him, For the full season, Matt Joyce has a 124 WRC plus in 105 games. Matt Joyce has been good, man. He's almost been worth a full win.
Yep, and as a bench bat, that's perfect.
And his defense is not good, but it's not like he's not the worst defensive player that you'll ever see in your life. He's not good, but he's not a butcher out there. He's not like someone you just can't have field. Clearly, you don't want him out in the outfield late in the game if you're winning. Let's just say that. But that's why you have Billy Hamilton, and that's why you have even Adam Duvall on your roster. Just go with it, go to Adam Duvall instead. But Matt Joyce, I think, has earned a role. Here's a controversial thing we can wade into a little bit if we want to, but is Matt Joyce starting as right-handed pitching in October if everybody's healthy?
I don't know if short answer is I don't think so, just because if everyone's healthy, that means Nick Markakis is on the roster. And
you know who's better than Nick Markakis against right-handed pitching? Matt Joyce.
I agree with you. He has
been. I just want to say it out loud.
But I don't think it happens, and...
It's not going to happen. If he's healthy, he's going to be playing, which we all know.
That is a more interesting question. That once you said it out loud, it's much more interesting than I thought it would be. I am somewhat hopeful that, you know, on the one hand, you know, Nick Markakis has obviously been hurt, but, you know, because he was an older guy who really faded down the stretch last year, one hopes that maybe he's well rested for a playoff run. On the downside, since he just got hurt, it's not like wrist and hand injuries don't have this long track record of guys really struggling at the plate when they come back from them, particularly with power, and that's not like something he was at an abundance of to begin with. So I do worry a little bit that Nick Markakis is going to come back. He's automatically going to be slotted in as just an everyday guy, and you just never really know what he's going to be when he comes back, not because of anything he is as a person, just so as that kind of injury doesn't lend itself to just kind of popping back in there and being awesome again.
I really, really wish, I'm sure we said this before on the podcast, if Matt Joyce was just right-handed and exactly the same, like if he hit lefties the way he hits righties, it would be so perfect. If you could platoon him and Markakis in right field or in a corner spot alongside Ronnie, whichever one you want to go to, you'd have an awesome player. Because Markakis can hit right-handed pitching, obviously. He's been very good this year against right-handed pitching too. If he's healthy, that's a big if. But if those guys complement each other better, it would be really cool. They don't, which is unfortunate. But, I mean, I'm more just saying it for effect in some ways, but Matt Joyce is a good hitter. Like, if you told me as a right-handed pitcher on the mound, how many guys on the roster would you rather have up at the plate than Matt Joyce? The list is not very long. It's at least four, obviously, because, I mean, the top four is the top four. But on it, you could probably make an argument Matt Joyce is a better hitter against right-handed pitching than Ozzie is. Ozzie mashes lefties. We all know Ozzie murders left-handed pitching, but if you look at Ozzie's splits versus Matt Joyce's splits against right-handed pitching, I'm not telling you that you have to choose Matt Joyce, but that's not a no-brainer for Ozzie.
No,
so,
you're right.
All that to say, Matt Joyce is clearly one of your top eight hitters against right-handed pitching, full stop. Whether he'll play against those guys or not, we'll see in the future. But I really just want to highlight the fact that he's been very good. And he was the only guy that was not of the top four, the core four offensive players this month that was actually good, aside from Ender Inciarte, who got hurt, you know, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah,
Joyce was the only guy that had a positive month at the plate, which is crazy to say, but it's true.
Yeah, the rest of it was just kind of, you know, timely, you know, intermittent contributions from everyone else. And then those four guys those four or five guys really just doing work. And even Ronnie's been scuffling lately. So, you know, to go 19-9, given all the circumstances, is pretty sweet. And hopefully everyone gets healthy and right. Because if they are, then, and this is what they are when they're not healthy and right. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm really just, part of that's highlighting the fact that they were able to win 19 out of 28 games with, granted, the top four guys were really, really good, but it was basically a 4.5 man offense for a full month, and they still won at a ridiculous clip. So, it's a strength, obviously, that having those four guys is a strength, even when Ronnie, as you mentioned, has kind of cooled off a little bit, and that's when Freddie gets scorching hot, and that's just the way this has worked this year. They've been able to time it very, very well to where at least two or three of those guys are bashing at any given time, and that's how you generate good offense. Anything you wanted to cover from this week? I mean, Max Fried had a big strikeout game. That was fun. Freddie, again, is just raking like crazy. Saturday was weird because the first inning was just like this slow drip of six runs in the first inning. I don't know. Anything you wanted to tackle? I have some highlight stuff, but it wasn't like there was anything that was just overwhelming that I felt like we had to talk about.
I mean, I really liked the way Max Fried looked. Later on in the start, he looked a little tired, but I mean, he had like a perfect game going for a little while there, and looked like he was going to strike out 20 batters in that game. So that's a welcome development, because he did definitely have that lull in the middle of the season where he wasn't looking quite as great and was a little more home run prone. And he seems to kind of found a second wind and really seems to be doing work. But other than that, I mean, look, Freddie Freeman's, you know, he's hitting home runs and he's going to hit 40 plus this year, which is not something I would have projected, just because that's just not really the approach he has. And I mean, the Braves could feasibly have three guys on this team that have 40 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers now, it's not insane.
No,
I don't know. I wouldn't bet on that by any means, but it's just, yeah, I hadn't thought about that till you just said it right now. I'm looking at the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you assume that Ronnie's going to get hot and he'll hit a few, and then
I mean, Ronnie's only got to have four more. Freddie has two more. Donaldson's seven in a month. That's not crazy.
It's not crazy, especially the way he's hitting right now. You know what I mean? And I think it could realistically happen. And you know, when you have that kind of power in your lineup, plus you have guys like Ozzie who are just like, you know, consistent contributors and have games where they just get on base a whole bunch. Hopefully, you get Dansby right. You know,
at the very least, you have three of those regulars that are slugging like 520 or higher for the season. Yeah. And Ozzie's like hovering around like 490-ish or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, those guys are just, we know those guys are mashing. Ozzie, by the way, I looked a second ago, his splits are ridiculous. Ozzie against lefties this year, a 166 WRC plus.
Yeah, he's a bad dude against lefties. He's a bad, bad dude
he's
against lefties.
He's just terrifying. By the way, and that equates to a 1051 OPS. He's basically, I don't know, Mike Trout. I guess left-handed pitching.
Oh, I'm sure that's going to go over well.
I mean, that's why I said basically he's not actually Mike Trout. I'm just saying, like,
the numbers are kind of there.
There's not a guy on this roster. It's a small sample size. He doesn't face that many left-handed pitchers, but it's, you know, that's been his whole career. He's been better against lefties and righties. But you know, there are very, very few players in the majors right now that you'd rather have up against a left-handed pitcher than Ozzie Albies. He's that good from that side. So, combined with everything else, man, it's a good problem.
It's definitely a good problem to have.
Also, I guess the last thing that I have, and maybe you want to add something else. I think I mentioned this briefly last week with Zach, but at this moment, the Braves have exactly the same record at home and away. 42 yep. 27 in both spots, which is just a rarity. You don't see that very often, particularly the road record. They have the best road record in the National League pretty comfortably. They have a 5-game lead on the Dodgers in that particular stat. It doesn't really matter, and there's some noise related to that. But taking care of business anywhere and everywhere is a cool thing. And that kind of, for me, that lends itself to, like, this is a real team. They don't have to be playing at home. There's no Coors Field advantage here where they're building their roster to a stadium. They're just good.
Well, yeah, and they're good on the home at home and on the road, and they're 10 games above 500 against teams that have winning records, which is not something the Nationals can say. They're sub 500 team against winning teams with winning records this year. Now, again, there's a bit of a noise from the beginning of the year where they were bad, but you know, it's an interesting thing to see kind of the different. I mean, both the Braves and the Nationals have very clearly been the two hottest teams in the majors. I mean, you can make an argument for what the Cardinals have done. There's been, you know, in the American League has some other teams, you know, that like what the Yankees have been doing, and you know, the Astros are obviously insane. But you know, you're looking at two of the hottest teams in the league, and their profiles are kind of similar. But if you kind of dig into it a little bit, you wonder how much noise there is in terms of what numbers you're looking at, because the Braves have had to find a lot of different ways to win and have had to deal with a lot of injuries and have matched the Nationals, who got everyone healthy and took advantage of a weaker point in their schedule. You know, what would you make of it? And, you know, just an eye test tells me that they're just both really good. And again, this series coming up next week, this coming weekend, that 4-game set is one of the, I think it's probably the series I've been looking forward to the most in terms of a regular season series. I mean, there wasn't a series even last year, even when I thought that the Braves, I mean, when I was on the podcast, I was saying, look, I don't even think that last series against the Phillies is going to matter. I think they're going to clinch before that. Yeah. In the first, and I don't have that strong of a feeling yet, simply because I have a lot of respect for what the Nationals are, and when it really, and they're both, they have a lot of young players that are really exciting. You know, I mean, not just Soto and, you know, Rendon, but I mean, Victor Robles is a really good player. Trey Turner always slays against the Braves, and you know, it's a series that feels like a playoff series coming up. I mean, it, you know, even if the Braves get swept, obviously they still have, if they get swept and, you know, the lead holds as it is right now before that, you know, they still have a 1.5 game lead. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I still like what the, where the Braves' position is, but it feels a lot like a playoff series in the sense that it kind of feels like the Braves could really put this thing away, and which is good because the Nationals are kind of scary.
Yeah, they are a little bit scary. I wanted to sort of end my little segment here with a look back at May 24th. That's a long time ago. At that point in time, the Braves were 29-23. They were in good shape, but the Nationals were 20-31. And the Braves had a 42% chance to win the division. The Nationals had a 10% chance to win the division. And basically ever since then, they've been, if not the two best teams in the league, because obviously they're, you know, Houston's been ridiculous, the Dodgers have been ridiculous. They've been two of the top five teams in the league since then. Full stop. Yep. So, and I think that's not crazy. I'm not sure that if you ask me right now to pick the five best teams in the league, I think there are three very easy candidates. It's the Yankees, it's the Astros, it's the Dodgers. I'm pretty sure I would take the Nationals and the Twins. Like, just by, I don't know. The Nationals would be in there. So, yeah. The Braves and the Twins. The Braves and the Nationals. And then the Twins would be my sixth. So I think I might just argue for the Braves and the Nationals 4 and 5.
Well, sounds about right.
I mean, in some order, but it's, and some of that's record for the full season. And I think the top three, they're all on pace for like 105 wins. Like, they're kind of in a different stratosphere to some degree. But honestly, they haven't been since, you know, mid-May, early May. The Braves have been right there.
Yep.
It's wild to say out loud, but it's true.
It's definitely true. And I really do hope that after this stretch, like, the division feels decided, because, like, going into a final week against the Nationals, you know what I mean? Like,
if it's not decided that final week, it's going to be pins and needles. Yeah, every single old ghost will be there, myself included. I mean, everyone who's been a long time, you know, Braves is one thing and Braves is bad enough, but Atlanta sports fan, like, every single meme will be back if the Braves are starting to falter late. So yeah, it would be really nice if they just put this thing away. And that seems pretty easy to say, but nicer than in a normal situation. If you just eliminated all the other factors and said, you know, obviously you would want a team to be putting it away, but the Braves did this not that long ago. I mean, it wasn't that recently, I suppose, but they had the well chronicled collapse 6 years ago. Was that 2013? What year was that?
I'm forgetting, but yeah,
I'm bad at years now because I'm old and I don't think of things anymore. But you know, not within this decade, they had a well chronicled collapse that was miserable to consume by everyone's standards. Like, it was not a fun experience to watch them just kind of implode.
Correct.
What year was that? Good gracious, was that 12 or 13? Sorry, it was either 12 or 11. My fault. Anyway, regardless, it wasn't fun. So let's not do that again. Let's just pedal to the metal and enjoy some positive winning baseball and beat the Blue Jays. That'd be a good place
to
start.
It is September 1st, and the Braves' magic number is 21, Brad.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Thank you for giving me that. That's a good stat. I have a friend, and he might be listening to this, so shout out to James Niemeyer, a good friend of mine, going back to college, where you and I both went at West Georgia.
University of West Georgia, go Wolves.
He graduated a year before I did, but we've joked about this a number of times. He's the guy in my life that will, he will do the out countdown in a big game. He'll start the out countdown at 17. It's like the top of the fourth. It'll be like 17 outs to go. He'll be that guy. And then he's also the magic number guy. It'll be May, and he'll want to know what the magic number is. So shouts to you, James, for listening, and that made me think of you. But it's not too early. It's once you get into like below like 50, you're probably okay. And 21 is like really okay.
Below 50. I'm not sure if that's the standard, but I mean,
it should be. Why not? Let's have some fun. Let's enjoy some baseball. Come on. Listen, you're catching me on a positive day. I'm sure people are like weirded out by me being positive about the Braves, like, for this long. We're going on 45 minutes now, and I've been pretty darn positive the whole time. But when you keep winning, man, they just keep winning baseball games. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, they're pitching well. They're hitting reasonably well, and it definitely doesn't feel like they've hit their stride. Like, nothing feels super unsustainable. You know, it's not like, you know, they have like a Chris Johnson-like stretch where he's hitting 450 and like carries the team. You know, like it's
are you trying to
like,
bring me down right now, Eric? Are you trying to level me off a little bit by mentioning Chris Johnson? The BABIP god, Chris Johnson?
Yeah, the BABIP contract extension god, too.
And by the way, National League batting title winner, Chris Johnson. That happened.
I'm pretty sure he didn't see a major league game two seasons later, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I take that back. I think he did.
Who could have ever seen that coming either? Did anybody in Braves Twitter see that coming, that he was going to suddenly not be hitting like a 421 BABIP for the full season? That's stunning. That didn't continue. Sorry.
But we're not seeing that with this team. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, if, like, Ronnie hasn't really hit his stride. You know, Ozzie's like, you know, there's ebbs and flows to it, but there's a lot of really talented pieces on the team to where you make it work when guys aren't, you know what I mean? Everyone's picking each other up when they need to be picked up. You know, we're not seeing like total bullpen implosions where you give up like 5-run leads. It's just not happening. You're going to give up some runs here and there. You're not going to get perfect starts from everybody. It doesn't seem to really matter, because this is not a team. This doesn't feel like a team that just gets rattled and completely falls apart. They just don't. And when you have a team like that, plus you have all the talent on the team, that they should be favored. They are favored, and you know it's going to take a lot. It's going to take the Nationals' best punch to make this a division race, and it could happen. But I'm still feel pretty comfortable betting on the Braves.
Yep, that's well said. We can certainly leave it there. You know. Consult your playoff odds. I usually put them out every couple days. The playoffs are now a virtual lock, not a full blown lock. The division is still in debate, but big time advantage for the Braves. They are going to win this division, you know, at least 8 out of 10 times if you were to simulate to the end, as the kids say. Yep. But yeah, should be fun, and we'll talk about it every single week. We're to Atlanta continuing beyond the playoffs. Beyond the minor league playoffs, I have to ask you.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more intermittent.
Sparse.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's only so many times we can talk about, you know, like Hayden Deal's minor league season over the course of an off season.
Why not?
But I'm going to talk to some guests. Sorry, bring some guys we've had on before. Maybe some guys we haven't. You know, bring in some of the guys from the different affiliates too, to kind of round down what they thought of the guys from the season. But it might not be an every week thing, just because there's just not much else to talk about, and we don't want to, like, you know, beat a dead horse too much.
It'll be like this podcast after the season's over, but before the winter meetings, when there's just nothing to talk about, and we still do it anyway. But
so it's not like on Road to Atlanta, we can be like doing too many winter previewing.
It wouldn't go Road to Atlanta, I suppose.
We'll do stuff on the Rule 5. We'll do some retrospective stuff on rosters and things like that. I did want to ask you two questions.
Uh oh.
Okay. First.
Yep. Let's do it.
What is your prediction for the four game series, just the four game series against the Nationals, where the Braves are at home?
What is my prediction? I'm gonna get in my analytical machine and take the only logical route, and that is a split.
I feel like that's right. I actually do think the Braves will take 3 of 4.
It is more likely that the Braves would win 3 out of 4 than lose 3 out of 4. So if you made me like if you refuse to allow me to pick a split. You know, being that the Braves are at home, I would have to lean to the Braves winning 3 out of 4. But I think split is the most likely outcome. You know, is that the most likely outcome overall? Like, would it be that or the field? Certainly not. I think pick one outcome, I will go with split. If you told me Braves over-under 2 wins in the series, like, you just take the over and expect to push. But I think I'd take the over if you made me choose. So you
mentioned this stretch of bunch of Phillies, bunch of Nationals games. At the end of that stretch, what size lead do the Braves have to make you feel comfortable that they're going to win the division?
So you're talking about the end of the whole stretch with both teams. We're talking about just for the people listening, September 19th. That means the Braves only have 8 games remaining after that. Me feel comfortable. I'm a broken man, Eric.
That's why I asked you.
I will say 7.
You would feel, you would only feel comfortable with a 7-game lead.
Okay, maybe six. Six is probably the right answer.
I think that
if
the
it's five, I'm not comfortable. Now, with that said, we talked about this a couple times, but as a reminder, Braves have a very easy schedule down the stretch. It's the last 8 games are 3 with the Giants at home, 2 with the Royals on the road, and the Mets on the road for the last 3 games of the season. So, in a vacuum, the Braves should win 5 of those 8 games, maybe 6 of those 8 games. But again, I'm a broken man.
Yeah, you're dead inside. Yeah.
So, okay, I will concede that 7 was a ridiculous answer. I will say 6.
Okay.
You said comfortable, like actually comfortable.
Comfortable, like you'll be like
in
okay,
my soul, comfort, not worried at all. Yeah. It's 6.
Not like analytically, like you will not be like without thoughts in the back of your mind of 6. This is where, yeah, 6. Okay.
6 is the answer, I think. Honestly, it might be 7. I'm not being funny about that. But I'm broken. This is not good reasoning. It's not good logic. The real answer, if I were to try to take away my years of broken sports relationships, the real answer should be like 3.
Yeah, because overcoming a 3-game lead over 8 games.
Over 8 games, and the Braves are playing against bad teams. Like, we're not bad, you know, 2 bad teams in the Mets.
Don't the Nationals only have, like, 1 game off this month?
They have a really, really grueling schedule. Even this week, you mentioned this earlier, but the Nationals, before they come to town, are playing every day this week.
And they go against the Mets.
I mean, they're playing at home, but they have to then travel. They played this weekend. I'm looking at the schedule right now for the Nats. I'm not seeing a lot of off time. They had 1 day off last week. They had Thursday off last week. But now they only have...
I think they only have one.
They have 2 more off days, and they have a doubleheader. So that kind of negates one. They have the 19th off and the 9th off. But they have a doubleheader against the Phillies on the 24th. That might be a big day in Braves world when the Nationals and the Phillies play twice on the 24th of September. So just circle that on your calendar. Hopefully by then it won't matter. Hopefully it'll be over at that point in time if you're a Braves fan. But that's one of those days that can just terrify you, because if the Nats go out and win 2 games in 1 day, it's, oh, good God, it's coming. But yeah, going back to my broken my broken state, I think the real answer, honestly, is like 3 games. And even then, like, the math would tell you that if the Braves are up 2 with 8 to play, they're 90% favorite, probably.
Yes. But you're
then, obviously, you can't assume the Nats are going to win every game. So, I mean, they have been basically for a while.
Yeah, they've been at a really good clip, but fortunately, the Braves have 2. And, you know, hopefully after this stretch, you know, we're going to see the Braves look, if they just win every series, this race is over. And I know you won't feel that way. Because...
No, you're right. No, that's 100% true. And even, you know, I'm taking myself out of it. I'll take you out of it. The only projection system that's updated right now to the minute is 538. And 538 has the Braves finishing 5 games ahead of the Nationals. So that has them both playing dead even basically the rest of the way, which is about right when you would expect, honestly, because I think they're pretty close to each other in terms of actual team performance. I think, you know, big picture, if you were to just project the rest of the season, you might just pick those teams to be in a dead heat. But a dead heat is a huge thing towards the Braves because you have a 5.5 game lead. So
indeed,
that's fine.
It's
97 wins, by the way, is the projection at this point, which is a lot higher than I said on this podcast, Eric.
Well, it's a lot higher than I said, and I picked them to win the division. So, you know, look, the team is really good. Everyone should be excited. People should be going to games. Just enjoy the fact that the Braves have been this good this year, because it doesn't take a particularly long memory to remember a time when this team was really bad. And windows like this, where you have a bunch of young, exciting players that are competing for hardware, who are really fun to watch, and who have a chance to really do something special this year in a season, that doesn't happen as often as in Braves fan minds as it should, but it's a rare thing, and I hope people are appreciating it for what it is.
Yep, that's well said, and then we will leave it there. Eric, thank you for joining me as always, my friend. Everybody should be subscribed to Road to Atlanta because you're on the same feed as this. So please subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. Tell a friend or 2 or 3. If you're out on Labor Day listening to this podcast, hey, what's that podcast you're listening to? Well, it's the Talking Chop podcast with lots of people that you may enjoy. Just sell it. Sell it for us.
And I think we've gotten the Google Podcast thing sorted out. Is that correct?
I think so. Yeah, we get a lot of questions about that. Chris Willis, who is of course the was he the managing editor, whatever he is, our
brand
boss,
vizier,
has been working on that. We found the link to where it was still working, but for some reason Google Podcast screwed us up, and it was like a weird Tigers podcast for a second. Hopefully that's fixed. If it's not, let us know. But Chris is still working on that. He's been communicating with SB Nation, and we should be good to go on that. If not, let us know, though, we'll fix it. But subscribe via the platform of your choice. That one should be working now. But Apple Podcasts, Overcast is a fun one, Spotify, Stitcher, Megaphone, who hosts the podcast. Also, you can just wait till we post the listening guide, which I do after this podcast, and Eric does after Road to Atlanta, on the site. If you want to be that guy and listen to it on the site, that's totally cool. But subscribe, do all that fun stuff. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for listening all season, guys. I mean, like, the Road to Atlanta and the minor league season's ending, so I've been kind of in a little bit more retrospective mood, but it's been pretty wild, the amount of, like, love and attention and the following that the podcast has developed over time. This kind of started as something that we were just kind of, you know, let's see if this works, and it's kind of turned into this thing that has been really popular and really well-received, and we enjoy doing a lot. It's basically just Brad and I, or Scott and Brad, you know, just talking baseball, and for whatever reason, you guys like listening to it, and we really appreciate it.
Yes, we do. That's well said, and again, shouts to Carlos Collazo for starting this podcast with me, but whatever.
We love you, Carlos.
We love you, Carlos, Baseball America's Own. But anyway, all right, thank you, Eric. As for everybody else, we will hopefully see you in this exact same time slot next week, and that's the plan. And subscribe, tell your friends. We'll see you then.